Let's talk about what happened in 1869 in Chicago.
The Wayback Files, Bob. 1869, finishing touches were being put on the Water Tower building on Michigan Avenue there. Not the Water Tower Place, of course. We're talking about the old pumping station built in the 1860s, really just completed 2 years before the Chicago fire, and one of the very few buildings to in the burn zone of the city to survive the Great Chicago Fire. Interesting that it was set up. It was built with the idea that it was going to be drawing clean water out of Lake Michigan for the city. Pretty important job. They built it out of limestone to withstand anything, but the roof was built out of wood and metal, and that's what caused it to collapse. Would have been really a pretty handy, I would think, to have the pumping station functioning during the fire, but that was not to be, Bob. Not to be.
Yeah, bad timing. And I love the White Castle connection. Tell us about this.
I just love this, too. The White Castle started, I think, in the Missouri area, but when they moved to Chicago, they modeled their buildings, their fast food restaurants, after the old Water Tower building, like the turrets, and wanted it to look grand and like a castle because there was a little bit of snobbery around fast food and burgers, and so they said, we're going to make it this exceptionally grand place to go, and they modeled it after the old Water Tower building, which is pretty cool to think about.
Yeah, right. Next time you have the bag of sliders, you'll delve into Chicago history. It was 26 years ago that Princess Diana came to town. I still remember, was it the Drake Hotel? And
yeah.
It was quite a night, wasn't it?
She paid a visit to Northwestern's campus as well. She was at the Drake Hotel, as you point out. She was at the Field Museum. I remember it well, too, Bob, because I just remember how the city was so excited. I mean, people turned out, thousands of people. I mean, I would only equate it to Pope John Paul's visit. I'm trying to think of just seeing the city streets lined just for people trying to catch a glimpse of a visiting dignitary. Princess Diana just captured the city at that time. So elegant, so glamorous. But she also projected such grace and kindness. I remember the images of her hugging cancer patients and just truly engaging with regular folks. It just seemed like that was who she was, exuded warmth and kindness. True story, you'll appreciate, Bob. She was here for fundraising for cancer research. That was the purpose of her visit. But the night of the big benefit at the Field Museum coincided with game one of the Bulls championship finals, and Northwestern's president at the time, who hosted Lady Di, told her, you are the only person who could knock Michael Jordan off the front page. She kind of did.
Yeah, true.
It's pretty exceptional.
And was it after she announced the divorce that she was here?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I look back at some of the video just preparing for this, Bob, and you see her, just the way she was holding herself. It was just a couple months after this major divorce had been announced that she and Prince Charles were getting a divorce. A big deal for the monarchy, a big deal for the British press. She was being absolutely, excruciated, or just like excoriated is a better word, in the press. Just talking about how she was the bad one in this whole thing, and she was going through a lot personally, but never showed it. We do have a clip, even though a lot of the things that happened when she was in the city were behind closed doors. There's a clip here we pulled for you, Bob. Lady Diana bidding farewell to Chicago.
And I hope that our paths will cross again in the very near future. But until then, from the bottom of my heart, thank you, Chicago.
Yeah. Too bad that, what was it, like just a little over a year after that she died?
15 months later, she died in that tragic car crash in Paris, of course, and had just paid a visit here.
And Chicago got a love letter this week in 1986. Anna?
In 1986, Bob, the release of one of the most iconic Chicago movies of all time, movies featuring Chicago. This one's up there for me, I think for a lot of people, too. Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Huge box office hit. Also critically acclaimed, Bob. I mean, but audiences love this. If you think about how many kids probably got some inspiration or at least dreamed about one day pulling a Ferris after they saw what he was able to do. Just such a fun movie. John Hughes, as you point out, the brilliant writer-director character behind Ferris Bueller's Day Off wrote it in a week. It took place over the course of one day. But what's so interesting, I think, to a lot of us here in the city, Bob, is that John Hughes grew up here, and this script, writing it, was so personal to him. He said he wanted to make the film a love letter to Chicago. He wanted to capture the arts, the architecture, the city streets, everything, but also the spirit of the city. And I don't know about you. I think he did that. I really do. I think it's just fabulous.
Fun to go back and look at it now and see what Chicago looked like in the 80s, isn't it?
Back then. Yeah. We have one line here, perhaps the most famous line, Bob, from the film. Ferris Bueller teaching us all a life lesson at the end of the movie.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Still true. This week in Chicago history, Superdog opened up. First time, right?
This one's got your name all over, Bob. Where, I wonder, on the Bob Surratt list of best hot dog stands, could you rank them? Is Superdog up there on the list somewhere?
Yeah, kind of in a class by itself with that big dog that they have there.
The big dancing dogs on the rooftop.
Well, yeah, and the big dog that you get.
The other one.
It's a larger one, as hot dog experts will tell you.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this, Bob. Are they spicier, would you say, than other dogs? Because that's what they say, the family has said, is their secret.
It's a different kind of formula in that dog, but I don't think it's spicy. I think the way it's packed with the fries and everything in the. Mm-hmm. I think the secret is the bun continues to steam in that cardboard box.
I know too much about this, don't I? We could go off for a long time, but let me just mention one thing. Maury and Flory Berman, who I'm sure you knew, passed away a couple years ago. High school sweethearts, husband and wife team. They launched the business, and it's their images that are reflected in that ginormous dancing wiener dogs, those wiener dogs on top of the restaurant, based on them as characters, as wiener dogs. And that's just it. They serve them with the pickled green tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the deal there, but they don't serve them with the ketchup. They won't do that.
No, of course not.
They won't do that. I guess they'll give you packets on the side, but that's still part of the thing. Other things so fascinating about this, Bob, is that Superdog has gotten so much national attention, featured in the book 1,000 Places to See Before You Die, which I thought was remarkable to get listed there next to the Taj Mahal and so many other places around the world. Go to Superdog.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
And we've got a little something from a Food Network special. As you say, it's been recognized nationally. And what are we going to hear here?
Food Channel has a little clip here when they went in and profiled Superdog back in the day, a couple years back.
You know you're in Chicago when Maury and Flory give you a wink and a wave. The giant hot dog people have been a local landmark since 1948, beckoning hot dog aficionados to the home of Superdog.
There you come. Enjoy your lunch.
Car hops still bring food to your window, and the Chicago-style dog reigns true to tradition.
Start with a bun. It's a steamed bun, poppy seeds, put the dog in, got mustard, relish, onions, pickle, put in our fries. We use a green pickled tomato and peppers. That's our Superdog.
That's what makes it special since 1948. Yes, the Bermans from Albany Park started it all. Finally, let's go fishing in the lake. Are you ready?
Okay, this one. I am not ready, but I know people who do a lot of fishing. I've actually tasted the salmon in Lake Michigan. Have you ever had it, Bob?
I don't think I've had lake whitefish.
Uh-huh. Mm. Yeah, I have some neighbors who are big fishermen, and they've caught it, but I didn't realize this. Back in 1971, they released thousands of baby salmon into Lake Michigan. Hmm. Apparently, Mayor Daley back then, huge proponent of creating fishing opportunities. He was a fisherman himself, but he said it was really a quality of life issue for the city. So this week, 50-plus years ago, they dropped the salmon in the lake, and here's Mayor Richard J. Daley beaming about big-time fishing coming to Lake Michigan.
No longer have to go, as he said, to Canada or to Seattle or any other place or to Nova Scotia to catch a lot of fine fish. And fishing is the greatest thing we can do. They say the Lord said that the time you spend fishing, you'll get additional time on earth. So you should spend a lot of time in prison.
There you go. If you grew up here, you still have PTSD about fillet of alewife in the lake. So.
Yeah. We had a lot of smelt growing up, but I liked those, Bob. They're a little different.
More next Wednesday from Anna DeVlantis this week in Chicago History. Thank you, Anna.
Talk to you then, Bob.
Yep.